Go wild with Nation Gear's end of regular season merch madness sale. Nation Gear is offering our favorite fans 20% off all regular season merch, and we're going to give you free shipping on any orders over $200. Stock up your closet for the playoffs, rep your team, and grab that merch you've been eyeing up all season long. Don't wait. This sale only lasts from April 1st until April 7th. Shop the sale at nationgear.ca.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Brian Boucher, you're listening to Nasty Knuckles.
You're listening to Nasty Knuckles, the Hockey Outlaws podcast, with your host, Terry Nasty Suttermeyer, and former Philadelphia Flyer enforcer, Riley Cote, as they go behind the scenes with your favorite NHL players. Time to face off.
All right, welcome back. What is happening, Nasty?
What's up, Rigorelia? I'll tell you what, I think people are getting sick of me saying this, so you're going to have to do something about it. Every week, is Riles coming to the game? He's on a roster. You were paid handsomely for this roster spot.
I know.
And you didn't show up again. You've been to one game. I'll give you credit for making one out of the first three, but listen, we're going to have to cut the pay here on you if you don't start showing up.
I know, man.
I know there's family issues.
Family issues, yeah. I also made one trek down to New Jersey Sunday afternoon, visit Scrub Daddy / Tovey.
Yes, we did.
So at
which was great.
Dropped the girls off and then just wasn't able to make it back to the Big Tilly. But
sounds to me like excuses are being made. Well, just
sounds
saying.
Like carried the weight.
I drove to the meeting, Scrub Daddy / Tovey.
Well, 20 minutes from your
pad. To Princeton for a game for the big fella, the King Elvis. Back home, grabbed the jerseys because we had to make a jersey swap.
Yeah.
Then to the game and performed way better than I ever have, I think. Actually, maybe not, but I'm never any good. But I still made it, and still made it upstairs till about 2 a.m.
Oh, wow. That's commitment, Nast.
And you were getting up around then, probably.
Probably.
Start your day. But anyway.
Big Tilly, though, three snipes, right? Toby?
Listen, anytime I can score, I got to give someone the credit, the players who pass it to me, or the Tovey stick, which... Me scoring three goals in one game
not bad.
Is not going to happen, but that stick, bang, pow, see it coming up.
Off,
oh, boy.
At least two of those that I saw.
And, you know, the teams we play in the men's league, you know, they're always saying something to be like, yeah, you're going to mention this or that. But they're probably like, how does Nasty score three goals, let alone one? How does he score three in one game? I don't know. I don't know how I did, but anyway, that Tovey stick, wet puck comes off of it, man.
Snappity snap.
Snaps.
Well, it was a good performance. I'll be there next week.
Well, you say
hopefully,
that.
Hopefully.
Blue Devils, he's coming.
Here I come. And what about Fly Guys?
It's just a tough go, man. Like,
not much to talk about.
I feel so bad for him. I know he said this. No one's feeling sorry for the Flyers. They're, you know, they don't feel sorry for themselves. They're just ready to get a win. You know, talking to some of the guys. Obviously, a very depleted lineup.
Yeah.
I mean, no one ever wants to make excuses, but I mean, you're missing a lot of key players.
It's like a bad car crash.
It really is.
It's like you don't want to look at it, but you kind of do, just to see how bad it's gonna get.
You know, like you can't watch their games and honestly say they're not trying. I don't ever think that's the case, but there's games where you're like, it doesn't seem like the effort was as there as
they just have absolutely no bandwidth now.
They finally got a break last night, and I'm like, finally, like Provy did the right thing, got the puck on the wall, threw it to the net. You get a lucky bounce, which they've had zero. Let's be honest. Zero puck luck, zero injury luck, zero luck, period. I thought, okay, here tonight we're going to get a win, you know, after finally get a break. You don't want to play, you know, coaches, you were a coach, put it on net. You know, if you don't have anything, throw it on net, you never know. And but they ended up, you know, just finding a way to lose the game late in the game. And Carter Hart's been absolutely amazing.
Big saves.
I mean, he just, you know, on TV last night they were saying, you know, it's almost like he's got to get you a shutout to get a win right now. And I hate saying, I'm not saying that in a bad way against the guys, the players, but it's just we're not scoring.
Not scoring enough goals.
And again, your lineup's depleted, but, you know, no one's looking for excuses. Yeah. No one wants to hear excuses. But it's just tough right now. And hopefully tonight they find a way to get this win. You don't want them to break that record that they tied.
It's not a record you
12
want.
12 losses in a row, and hopefully we find a way to win.
That's tough.
Against an Islander team that needs wins, you know, and they're playing better. You know, they beat us twice last week.
Yeah. And then speaking of the injuries, you know, we depleted lineup. You know, we got to bring up the fact that some of these injuries are guys re-injuring themselves, like maybe coming back too soon, whatever the case may be. But there's been at least three of them this year that guys have come back and then they're back on the shelf, which certainly doesn't obviously help the end goal of winning games. But, I mean, I guess the question is what's happening there? Is it complete coincidence?
I don't know.
You know, are they coming back too soon? I guess we'll never know. I mean, I'm not in the medical room, so I don't know. But the bottom line is there is a business of keeping these guys healthy or trying to get these guys back on to the ice is in the quickest possible way, but also in the most productive long-term safe way too, right? I mean, you don't want to get a guy out there and then have him blow a knee out, the same knee out, you know, 2 weeks back. So I think it's pretty apparent that there's something going on there. That many guys in the shelf, and then again, half those guys being re-injured. What are your thoughts here now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like you said, like I'm not a medical guy, never was. So it is. I don't know, alarming when this happens. Like, I've seen a lot of things on you know, social media, like, questioning it. And some people have asked me, I'm like, I can't tell you because I'm not a medical guy. But it's tough when you have, like, Kevin Hayes, this poor guy, can't catch a break this year. Like, the same thing, basically, you know, three surgeries so far. Just not the way anyone was planning on it to go. And I'm sure the medical staff wasn't either.
No, of course not.
I mean, it's just... You know, not knowing, not having a medical background, I don't really know what to say, but it is odd. And it's just, if it's just bad luck, it's the worst luck you could have with what's happened. I mean, you bring Ellison, like you said, and he seems to be working on the same injury and not having him. And we talked about this last week. It's a huge difference. I think we're looking at a different scenario. And I know he's one 100%. Guy, but if he's playing...
He logs a lot of minutes.
Exactly. It's a different story, but we don't have him.
Yep.
Haven't had him all year. I guess he's frustrated. I'm sure everyone is because no one expected this, or at least we didn't hope for it. I know he had some injury issues the last couple of years, but it's just tough, man. It's tough to watch. It's tough because we know the you know, guys, and it's tough seeing him struggle like this. You know, I don't know really what to say about the injury bug.
Yeah, no, there's not much. We're not in the locker room. We don't really know. We're kind of regurgitating stuff that we're hearing. But what is obvious is that guys, at least three guys, have been, you know, re-injured with the same injury. Yeah. So there's question marks around it. But you know, I say in good news in Flyers land, or in at least Keith Yandel's world, he is now tied for the Iron Man with
Jarvis.
Mm-hmm. With 964 games,
yes,
which is an unbelievable feat. I mean, anybody that's played the game of hockey, to string that many games together, even at the youth level, is nearly impossible.
It is.
Especially at the NHL level. So props to Keith Yandel, an amazing, amazing feat. And your boy, Phil Kessel.
He's on his footsteps there.
20 games behind him. Who would have thought, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, Kess, he's a machine, that guy, man. You're right, Riles. Like, you know, think about how many games in a row that is. That is
incredible.
The fact that anyone ever did it, at this level. Yeah, I've missed men's league games because of injury.
Oh, man, you and me both, man.
Like, it's
a little tweaker here,
it's insane
tweaker
that a guy could play at the highest level. And, you know, even, you know, not to take away from Yans, but, like, even Provy this year, unfortunately, his streak stopped.
Yeah.
I mean, for a kid coming in from his first day, he hasn't missed a game.
Yeah.
Like, that was insane, and it's a shame how he had to miss it. But back to Yans, like, I heard someone talking yesterday about when he was in Florida last year. He's such a good guy in the locker room. It's such a team guy. I guess Quenneville was going to, like, bench him. And the players went in there almost like a Rudy type thing and said, you're not scratching him.
Wow.
And they didn't. And he's at 964. Yeah. He's going to break the record tonight.
It's incredible.
We've been kidding around with some of the guys, just like, is he walking in there with a spaceman suit on so he doesn't catch anything, you know?
This guy,
I got a feeling like he's going to do find a way to have a positive test no matter what. But I'm happy for him, man. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
And he's a great guy in the locker room. Obviously, hasn't been the year that anyone wanted, and maybe he's even had to step up and play where they didn't see him playing with the injury to Ellis. And but he's a great guy. He's a great locker room guy. It was great that they brought him in for Hazy after the tragic things that happened over the summer. So it's almost like having family with him all the time. And
100%.
He's a great guy, man.
Yeah.
So congrats to you, Yans, man. You're the man.
Yeah, yeah. Big props to Yans on that one. Not easy to do, that's for sure. And I guess we're ready to rock episode 59.
Let's do it, our boy Boosh.
Yeah, Boosh, presented by Curaleaf, a medical marijuana dispensary, 12 locations, and the 13th location opening Thursday, Nast. And we're going to go check it out.
We're going to be there, bro.
Wayne, PA.
Yes, we will be there.
So check them out, Curaleaf.com, for all your medical marijuana needs. And episode 59, let's go.
Let's go. Boosh, here we go.
Welcome back. I'm Riley Cote.
And I'm Derek Settlemyer. And this week, we are very lucky and fortunate to have our good friend, former first-round pick for the Philadelphia Flyers, one of the best analyst TV guys I know, and he started right away, Mr. Brian Boucher.
Boosh.
Boosh, what's up, brother?
What's up, guys? How you doing? Great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Great to see you.
No, my pleasure. Great to see you, too. Riles growing the hair out circa 08, 09.
Yeah, bringing it back.
Knocking some guys out. Knocking some guys out pretty soon.
That's right, Boosh. So I don't know if you know this. I don't know if you're following the Federal League. I know the NHL doesn't keep you busy enough, but Dave McIsaac, your former teammate, is coaching in the Federal League up in Connecticut, and they tried to sign Riles.
Well, they did.
They did sign you. It fell through. But he's got the locks, and he goes, Riles, I'm telling you, just power play, you know, just you're going to play. I'm like, you don't think some donkey's going to come, like, slash you and try to go? And he's like, nope. I just want to smoke the peace pipe and play hockey, boys.
Oh, yeah. A little power play time. Daniel LeCarrier.
That was all they needed. When they said
the
PP,
changed, man.
Hey, when they said power play time, this guy's like, where do I sign?
Where do I sign?
I'm like, and our buddy, Boosh, just so you know, Boosh, Mac got suspended a couple weeks ago. He, one of his players got cheap shot. I saw the video, and it was kind of a both teams in the middle of the ice. And Mac just calmly walks off the bench right to the pile and just starts trying to throw bombs in his suit. Like, some things don't change, boys.
Oh, that's crazy. When I watched that show that was on, what was it, on Netflix? The one about the Danbury
Trashers? Trashers, yeah.
I couldn't believe how many ex-Phantoms were, you know, part of that team. I couldn't believe it.
Some brain surgeons, man. Garrett Burnett.
It was like they were recreating our Philadelphia Phantoms. Yeah, Bernie. Yeah, the guy who ate Flexol. Unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Flexol.
Bernie and Frankie. And obviously,
days.
Mac was a captain. Mac was a good player, though, too, like in that league, you know, like. But
I remember Bernie was my roommate there in the Phantoms for a bit, and I was scared to death of him. I just was like, I, you know, he'd come in and he'd light candles all night when we'd go to bed. Like it was like a seance going on in our room. I was like, dude, you're going to put those candles out when we go to sleep, right? We're going to burn this hotel down. I mean, I barely said a peep to him because I was so scared of him. You know what I mean?
Oh, my God.
He's flex all.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Hey, what was the science behind that? Did he ever talk to you about the science behind eating Flexol? Because I've heard this several times. I just can't figure out what the hell.
He'd dip a power bar in it, or he would just put it on his hands and eat it.
Was it a stimulant, though? Is it, what is it doing exactly?
I think he just got – he liked it because the boys thought it was stupid and crazy. I don't know, but
– they kill you.
Well, then we had
gets you fired up from the inside.
Exactly. What's it do to your gut though? Like can't even imagine. But or your brain cells.
Yeah,
you know, Bernie, he's a buddy. I saw him a couple years ago. Bush, believe it or not, in Vegas. He's out in Vegas. But I was going to say, along with the Flexol, this other lotion or whatever it was came out. And we called it cat jizz, the late, great Chris Felix, Catman. He had this stuff, and it was, like, extra hot. Like, guys were,
like Tiger
put
Bomb
a barely, or... barely put a little bit on, and it worked. I don't know what it was. But he's like, that's not, I'll eat that, too. And I just remember guys going, no way. Power bar right in the cat jizz, ate it like nothing ever happened. Now, I never followed Bernie after he would do that. Maybe he went and puked. Yeah, I don't know, yeah. But... it was crazy, man. Never seen a guy do that, except for him.
Probably. We had some real beauties, that's for sure.
Well,
that was something else.
We had Monty on, Jimmy Montgomery, last week, Boo, and we didn't really get into Bernie, but I remember there was a couple episodes of a show they shot at Frankie's, just with a pizza delivery guy. It was Bernie. That's all I'll go. That's as far as we'll go with that, but it was hilarious. Outside on the roof, filming into the room and like coming in with a pizza. It's great.
That makes some good TV.
Crazy Frank. Shit though. We don't need to get into that though. No. Boosh, what's going on with you right now? What are you up to, bud?
Right now, working for ESPN. New gig this year, the first of a 7-year deal for ESPN with the NHL. Real fortunate to get a job with them. When NBC's rights expired and we found out NBC wasn't going to be getting a new deal. You know, obviously a lot of us at NBC, I think we're a little bit nervous about, you know, what the future holds. But fortunately, I think just about every one of us landed on our feet somewhere else. I know Anson and Jonesy and Liam are over at TNT. Edzo as well, Kenny Albert there at TNT. And I was able to, you know, get a gig at ESPN. So doing pretty much the same thing. We got a great new cast here at ESPN, a lot of new faces, new teammates. So it's been good, man. I mean, it's a great gig. I mean, I do a game or two a week and, I get to still see my kids' stuff and still get to live a normal life to a certain degree. Right. I mean, you're trying to balance everything. And I think that's the best part of it. And you got a real supportive group there. So, really excited about that.
Yeah, it's been I liked NBC. I thought it was great on there too, but it's been interesting and really, really well done, I think, on ESPN. And you're really good, Boo. Like, you could always talk, and even when you first, I guess, decided to go into this broadcasting, I remember you doing like some Phantom games. I remember we talked to you the one day, and you were going over the lineup. We were laughing about some of your impressions, which hopefully we'll get a couple out of you. But we were in New York, I think, or somewhere, and you were doing Shel Samuelson, like looking at the lineup you had to work with that night for the Phantoms. I can't remember who I was with, but we were talking to you, and it was so funny. But, when did you start thinking about it, Boosh, going into the broadcasting once you were done playing?
Yeah, I mean, the first guy that ever said anything to me was Keith Jones. Jonesy said to me one day, I'll never forget, we're in Pittsburgh, and I was out for a morning skate doing extra like I typically had to do because I wasn't playing that night. And, got done and I was sitting on the bench just having a, Gatorade or whatever, just kind of, trying to, catch my wind. And, he said to me, he's like, I just asked him, because Jonesy was a great teammate and a good guy. I just asked him, Jonesy, what's it like, to do TV? He's like, he's like, it's great, kid. He called me kid all the time. It's great, kid. He's like, you got to do this when you're done. And, so he was the first guy that got me thinking about it. And, And then when I go on the road, like Elliot Friedman, who works, for Hockey Night in Canada, he'd always say stuff like, hey, when you're done, you know, you should really think about it. So I had enough people that were kind of like saying it to me. I was kind of like, are these guys saying like I'm such a shitty player that I should retire right now? Like I didn't know I was trying to like decipher what the heck's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
But I think they were just being nice and just saying, hey, you know, you should think about it when you get done. So when I got done, I did think about it, but at first I wanted to retire and just be home and you know, be with my kids. And but the reality was I missed having purpose, right? Like it was great to get up and bring the kids to school and do all that. But for that 1 year, I felt lost. Like I didn't know what to do on a daily basis. So I think that's when I decided, I was like, you know what? I got to get my act together. And if I want to do it, you know, go for it and see how it is, you know? And I started with, like you said, I did some Phantom games there for Service Electric when the Phantoms first went to Lehigh Valley. And Riles was coaching at that time, assistant mm-hmm. coach, and I did those games. I mean, basically for nothing. It was just to get reps, right? And I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I mean, I had no clue what I was looking for, you know, how to talk to the truck, all that stuff. So it was great. It was a great learning experience. Made mistakes where I'm sure a lot of people didn't watch. So you know, that's a nice feeling. And then I did Flyers pre and post, and you know. Got to make mistakes there as well, and fortunately got an opportunity at NHL Network to do an afternoon gig one day, and from there like I ended up getting someone recommended me to NBC Sports and finished up that season, did playoffs, and that turned into 1 year, and then that turned into a 5-year deal. So really lucky, and I'm sure, and I know this, that Keith Jones along the way everywhere I went, I know that he pushed my name and push for me to be on their team, and I'm forever grateful for that.
That's awesome. Yeah. He is a great guy. He's very he just jumped right into it too. I mean, I know there was probably a learning process for him as well, but he was one of those naturals. I feel like you and Patrick Sharp and him, like they just pop in my head as guys that just could jump right in front of that camera. It can't be easy.
No, yeah.
I was gonna say,
yeah. I mean, like it's one thing to have a good personality and then actually like bring it all together and to get into a space where there's so many people trying to get in that space, right? I mean, there's such limited jobs in the color and the analyst space. But you know, for you to hop in there, like you said, you banged out a couple years with the Phantoms, but to get with the Flyers and then get on NBC shortly thereafter is pretty impressive. But I'm not surprised. You speak very well, like Nasty said. Like when I listen to you, like you know, it's like, kind of like Jonesy. You know, like when I hear Jonesy speak, it's, you know, he's speaking the truth. He's speaking from experience. You know, there's a lot of essence behind what he's saying. I feel the same for you. So, did a hell of a job, and it's not a coincidence that you've been able to ride this wave this long.
Thanks, guys. You just hope you make sense, you know, when you're talking. Like, you don't know. Like sometimes,
yeah, right.
And sometimes you want to hit the wrap it up button, too. You know, like you can't spit it out quick enough. You're like, and your play-by-play guy's looking at you like, he's like, you know, you wrap it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
It's cool. nothing worse than stepping on a goal call for those guys. That's like them scoring a goal. So, oh, yeah. So if you mess up with that, sometimes you'll get a dagger thrown right at you. So that's like, but it's good. You know, it's like some days are better than others. You know, you can speak English some days and some days you can't. And like when we played, we all had bad days. But
that's
it's
the truth.
Great.
No, but you know what, Boos? It's funny you said that. Like, are you ever worried? Like, because you're not that far removed from the game, and you still have friends that are playing, and you've met people along the way. Like Riley said, you tell the truth. You have to. Like, you're at that level, that stage. But like, you ever worried about like, oh man, should I say, am I gonna piss this guy off? Does that ever like even resonate in your head or not really? It's like you have to do your job, right?
I mean, yeah, I mean, at times it crosses my mind. I will say, especially early on, like when I first got into it, because then I was really close to being removed from the game. So, yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, I remember when I played, like if somebody buried me, I don't know how you were, Riles, but maybe nobody buried you because, like, you were, you know, your role was like,
you may punch him.
You were a tough guy. You know what I mean? Like, you'd kill him. And I'm not hurting anybody. But, you know, like, I just remember, like, I honestly, at times I was sensitive. I'm going to be honest with you. Like when I played, like I was sensitive. Like it, you know, it hurts your feelings. Like if someone says you're terrible, you know, like it's not like you can handle that. Like, you're not like, oh, okay, that's constructive criticism. You know, it's not, it's like somebody's telling you that you stink, and it's, you know, we're all humans at the end of the day. We have feelings, and, So, yeah, I mean, I think about it at times, and that's why I try not to make it, it's not personal,
right?
And you certainly don't want to make it personal. Like, if you're going to say something, it's really about maybe that play or that game. It's not like a general statement that you're, it's not like I'm going out there like, sure, I have opinions of players, and if we were talking, you know, I might say, that guy stinks, right? You know,
yeah.
And I think he's a brutal player, but like, I would never, ever think of going on TV and saying it like that. Like, there's
right.
a better yeah. way of putting yeah. it. Than being brutally honest like that if you're just talking with your buddies. So I think, yeah, I mean, you speak the truth, but you also have to be respectful of the game. You got to be respectful of the player. And, you know, because I know, God knows, I wasn't perfect as a player. And if I was to say something so brutally honest like that, I mean, you could do it tenfold to me. So,
yeah.
You know, that's what you got to be careful of, I guess, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fine line of being truthful and then brutally honest, right? I mean, like you said,
yeah.
I guess this game of mistakes, and these guys are just trying their ass off to make it work. It's
right.
a tough business. Like, let's like throw them a bone here,
too. Yeah.
But you happen, you yeah. also have to be calling the game too.
But I also know, like, if I was just you know we were having a couple beers, and I, you know, say I had like a hate on for a player that I played against. I mean, maybe Riles, you were like this too. But if I had a hate on for a guy that, you know, he did something to me years ago and I couldn't let it go.
Right.
I mean, I might be biased to bury that guy, like privately, like, oh, that guy, you know, and hold a grudge forever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, and you might be like, hold on a second. Like, do you really think he stinks? Or are you just mad because he, you know, he lit you up for 5 goals or something
yeah.
like that, and you can't get over it. So I think that's where, you know, you got to, when you're being, you know, when you're critiquing somebody, I think you got to, what do you critique? Why are you critiquing? And is it personal? And if you don't make it personal, then hopefully the guys understand that.
Yeah.
I know that if the guy would give me praise, like if an analyst would praise me on a certain play and then criticize me on another, then you take the good with the bad, you know, but
yep.
Certainly think about it. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's an interesting space. You know, I can't even imagine. Myself, I did a little bit of that stuff when I was with the Phantoms and you know, the media stuff. But I just I struggle with that very thing. Just being honest, obviously trying to be honest about the game. But then, you know, these guys do have feelings, and you can say, well, this sport is for tough character players. But at the end of the day, like you're also. They're buddies, right? You're not trying to bury them, and you're really trying
yeah.
to teach them, right? But obviously in your space, you're not really trying to teach. You're just trying to educate the public about what may or may not be going on the ice that's
right.
appropriate to the game.
Well, I mean, well, Rouse, but what about like when you coach, right? Like, I'm sure like you're in the coach's
thing.
Office, and the brutal honesty that's going on in the coach's room,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're probably looking at the list and going like, seriously, that guy shouldn't even play with a stick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He's that bad.
Chief.
You know?
Yeah.
And
then, that's exactly
and then
it.
You come out, and you're showing the guy a video, like, hey, you know,
yeah,
you
bring
really
the
job
mitts out.
Here, really inside.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
That's
so true.
Chief used to use that one. He told Ben Eager one time, hey, Eags, just leave your stick here. You don't need it.
Yeah.
Next shift, he had him coming up.
Yeah.
Just this guy doesn't need a stick.
Yeah, you can't be brutally honest with the guys all the time. Are you guys are gonna completely lose them? Yeah, you got to bring up the oven mitts now and then. But the conversation that happens before the player comes into the coach's room, where you actually
it's way different
than what's actually being communicated.
That's
no
funny.
Question.
That's funny because
that's
like,
that's a goal that we got to get somehow. Like, imagine if you get like you know the HBO 24/7 behind the scenes, and you really get the honesty. Oh my god, you'd have guys quitting hockey.
Yeah, exactly.
No kidding.
Exactly.
I always talk about like the conversations I've been in the coach's room about other players, and I'm thinking like, I can't even imagine the conversations that were had around me when I was playing. Like, how bad was this guy? Like, you know, like, man. It's terrible. Some of the things are said.
Yeah, it's true.
Pretty painful.
Well, it's funny. Like, you know, you as an equipment guy, trainer, whatever, we'd be with the coaches a lot, right? We're with you guys a lot. We're also with them because you guys weren't there as long as they were. So you'd hear them just going, this fucking guy.
Oh, yeah.
gotta
play.
He's done. He's in the stands. And then it's like the GM call, well, he's got to play. You know,
yeah.
And they're like, fuck this. Hey, great job, bud. Let's get going tonight.
Yeah, I know, right?
You know everything they were saying 10 minutes before, but... Oh, that's part of the game, I guess.
Good for you guys not to come in and be, hey, Bush, I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, right.
You know,
they love you, man.
Killing you this morning.
They were killing you, but they love you, man. They love you.
Yeah.
So Boosh, gotta go back a little bit to your rookie year. You come in, and I was fortunate enough to have you there. We were the Phantoms, and I was saying to Riles, like, I'm so proud of Boo where he is now and the career you had, especially coming in as a rookie and having your mentor being Mr. Neil Little. You could have gone down the wrong road, boys. Hey, we have Litz on a lot. Like, we have this segment called Overtime, and he joins us a lot. Just give us his, because he's still scouting a bit, and so we always get his feedback. But first of all, he's obviously one of our best buddies, great guy. But man, you went the right way, Boo. It could have gone a little left, but you kept it straight.
He was the perfect partner for me at that time, man. Like, I'm wired tight, and I want it so bad. And I think he taught me a whole nother side of how to approach it, you know, like to be loose, to be a great guy, to get your teammates to want to play for you. You know, like, that was the one thing that I realized when I got there. I was like, I thought, oh, I'm this first round pick, and I got to play, I got to develop. And we had such a good team. I mean, truthfully, our Phantoms team could have been an expansion team in the NHL, and we probably would have been pretty competitive. I mean, we had some really talented players, and then we were tough on top of it. You know, so I think you know, there was a pecking order that you had to get in, but Litz was like, he was a competitive guy, but the way he handled himself on a day-to-day basis, I mean, it was pure class. Like, I mean, he taught me, you know, that it doesn't have to be full throttle all the time, that you know, there's times when you can, you know, get into another gear and figure it out. And honestly, I took a lot of the stuff that I learned from him that one year with me the rest of the way. And I've always been, like I said, wound up tight, and I'm wired a certain way. But really, at the end of the day, I saw how much guys loved him. And I want, you know, look, we all want to be liked. We all want our teammates to play hard for us. And although I'm not a clone of him, but I tried to take some of like his personality and apply it to my everyday life and be a little bit more easygoing. And I know that some of it is not, it's not like his easygoingness, it's natural for him, but I'm sure he's, in some ways, his competitiveness is driving him too. Like, I know that he was like, I remember he told me, he told me, I'm going to make $1 million, you know, someday. He said that to me when we were playing in the minors, and he had this like confidence in himself that he knew that he was going to be fine. He was going to be successful, but it could or could not be in hockey, but he was a smart guy. He knew how to figure things out, and man, he's an awesome dude. And I know when I had some tough times, some tough games, like I was all stressed out, and I'd go to him and he'd say, partner, he's like, we got to go for some beers. You know?
Right.
And that's, you know, and you know, it broke the tension, and we let loose a little bit and had some fun, and he was a great teammate at the right time for me. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he's a beauty.
You don't find, I've never come across someone that did not, that had something bad to say about Neil Little.
Yeah.
Put it that way.
Yeah. And I'll say this too, and he never stopped helping me. Like, he helped me, like, my son went and played at the U.S. National Program, and he connected me with his good buddy, Chris Osgood.
Yeah.
And, you know, he connected us together, and Tyler ended up living 2 years at Ozzy's house.
Oh, Lord. Right. So you took a chance on Tyler going the other way too, because these two, Litz and Ozzy, man, those two are like twin brothers, man.
In a pod.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
So Litz never stopped helping me. And I'm grateful for that too.
That's awesome, man. Real quick, speaking about that team, you come in as a rookie, and we go on to win the Calder Cup that year. It was just so much fun. I talk about it all the time. People are probably sick of hearing me say it, but just such a group. I guess anytime you win, it's always special. But like, we just had such a good group of guys, man, and just everyone kind of fit in together. I guess that's how you part of winning is having a team like that. But you're right, we had a lot of good players, man. And so many guys we could talk about, but you got to talk a little bit about Frankie Bailoas, the animal, our man. I was going to say, I don't know if you'll do Frankie for us, but.
I'm in another state right now.
Yeah, you're okay.
Right. You can't find
it. You can't find it. He'll find you, but not today. I'll never forget one quick thing. they wanted to shave guys' heads, and he wanted to shave your head, not because you had done anything. He was just kind of fucking with Boo, and he and Boo had the nice frosty, frosty tips. He had the, he was a little mid-length frosty tips, looking good. I remember you come full sprint down this long hallway we had at Hollydale, and right under my desk, and I'd like jump out of the way, and then I see Frankie lumbering down. I'm like, oh no. Lord, let me get out of the way. I get out of the way, and he goes, I'll pay you, dude. Frankie's like, how much? So he didn't end up getting his head shaved, which was good. But Frankie, boy, was he tough, Boo. Hey, oh my God.
Oh man, every day, I'll never forget, he'd come in every day, right, at practice and into the change room, he'd gear right down. He'd take, you know, all his street clothes off. You know, most guys get into their hockey underwear pretty quickly right after. Frankie would walk around. Yeah, he'd walk around, you know, naked, go to the bagel bin.
And wash your hands, Frankie.
Oh my God. And I'd be like, this guy is he's nuts. You know what I mean? Like, I came from junior, and his stories, I mean, his life stories, I couldn't believe it. And every day he told me, like, he never had tape on his stick, right?
Right.
Like, he didn't have tape on his stick. And he practiced with the Gretzky Jofa helmet unbuttoned. Right?
He did. Really? Yeah.
He never shot the puck below my nipples in practice. Never. It was always like here, right? And if I looked like over, he'd be like, "What the are you looking at?" You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. Nothing.
Nothing.
So he knew I was petrified of him. So I think he was messing with me. He told me every day, well, at least every week, he told me that he was going to shave my head. Yeah. And he called me a cocky rookie. He's like, I'm going to shave your head. And then finally that one day, he chased me down the hallway. He had the clippers. I don't even know. Did he have clothes on? I don't even know if he had clothes on. But I was like, Frankie, have your eyes. I was like, Frankie, I'll pay. I promise you.
Still shaving.
And then he... And then he laughed at me. He's like, yeah, he's like, I ain't going to shave you, kid. You know what I mean? So, man.
Oh, man. That's what every time great. I talk to him a lot. He's obviously in the area. And like, he'll be like, Kobe, little midget. And I'm like, dude, I'm going to smack you right in the face when I see you. Oh, I'm coming over now. Like, okay, never mind. I'm kidding, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, man. He thought, I'm going to shave your head.
Yeah. Oh, he's
I loved his stories. Yeah, I loved his stories, man. He was and that whole team. I mean, you think about the tough guys we had, right? I mean, Dave McIsaac was tough. Jeff Staples was tough.
Yeah.
Payette.
Andre Payette.
Johnny Stevens was tough. If we weren't winning on the scoreboard, we'd find a way to goon it up and somehow leave the game with, you know, some chuckles and some camaraderie, which was pretty awesome.
The best boost we were talking about, I know I've told Riles before, you know, the attendance was amazing for the Phantoms the first few years, and the place would be packed, and we're up, you know, a couple goals or down a couple goals, and the whole place is going, we want Frank.
Oh,
and there's like 11 seconds left, and Billy's like, get out there, but don't do anything stupid. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fuck, 17,000 screaming his name. He's not going to do anything stupid. The other team's like, oh no.
Don't do it.
Don't send him out of here. But it happened.
About the timing for that team, right? I mean, like, you got the old Spectrum, which had all this like history and nostalgia, right?
Yeah.
They built this brand new building for the Flyers. Our team was, you know, coached by the Flyers Hall of Famer. You know, we had such a good team. The timing was perfect for that whole setup. And, you know, the rivalry with Hershey, it was a dream come true. Because, you know, you guys know, I mean, you can play in some real bad places in the minors, right? And be able to play in Philly. And then, truthfully, to be honest with you, I mean, the Flyers struggled at that time, right?
Yeah,
I think in 98, 99. I think they had a losing streak of 12 games back that year. Like, they were... You know, and they had this team that was supposed to win, and we were this team that just kept winning. The fans really took to us, and, you know, they lost first round, and we go all the way to the Calder Cup. It was what a magical time for a minor league team.
It almost didn't seem minor league just because of the building being packed and, you know, the team we had. But you're right. Unfortunately, right now, they have a shot at breaking that 12-game losing streak tonight.
God.
Hopefully that doesn't happen. Hopefully they can get a win.
Is that a record?
13 would be a Flyers record.
No way, huh?
Yeah. They tied it last night.
Oh,
but, Yeah, you're right, Boosh. It was a great time, and Frankie was a beauty. And one quick question about that, Billy Barber, what would he say to Brad Watson every game?
Brad, I don't know. I mean,
Boosh used to go, Brad, can I talk to
Brad,
you?
Excuse me for a minute there, buds. Can I ask you a question? And then, you know, Brad, no, you can't. Yeah. You know, and then he starts snapping. You know, oh my god! I'm sorry. I'm trying to keep it PG.
No, no, I hear you. I hear you.
F bombs.
We understand.
My other job. Yeah. But
oh, that was good though.
Billy was the greatest. Billy was the greatest man. I mean, he was. Oh my god! Some of the stuff that he said. I remember the time he bag skated us for 3 straight days, and you know, we come in, we'd skate for like an hour and a half or 2 hours and kick us off the ice. Then we came back, did the same thing. And then the third day, he finally ended it. And he says, everybody stretch. And we're stretching. And he goes, there's two ways around here. And, you know, I'm thinking, he goes, my way. And I thought he was going to say the highway, right? And he goes, my way and my effing way. And then he kicked us off the ice.
You know, Monty, Jimmy Montgomery was saying last week, we were kind of talking about Billy a little bit, and he goes, and he always had his finger in his ear when he was like, sometimes he would, he always had his finger in his ear, like as he was saying this stuff. he was great,
well,
though.
They're buds. Oh my god, they're
buds. Oh, Delio, he's not. We had Patrick Uhlin here, who's from Sweden a year before you, and he had a big year. He played with Whitey. He had played with the Flyers my first couple years there, and they sent him down after camp, and we were playing Hershey on a Saturday night. Now, Friday night, we had played at home, and he took his high stick, like, on the cheek here, and he had about 4 stitches, like, little cut, you know, and it drove Billy and Stutzy nuts, because when this happened, his wife was sitting, like, in the first level, and ran down to the glass and was like up at the glass, like looking at her husband, who just took a little cut, you know, like it wasn't that bad, you know, like, so they were losing their minds. Cat, get him back on the bench, you know, like just giving it to Cat. So the next morning, Uli comes in and he says, can you put a full bubble on my helmet? And I said, what? And the cut was here, and he had one of those long Luke Robitaille visors.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the stick actually got up inside of it because it was so big. It was like only thing you'd really hit is his mouth.
Right.
So anyway, the stick must have got in there. So he comes in, and he asked me to do that, Boo. And I'm like, dude, all the first thing popped in my head, Billy's going to lose his mind if this guy comes out for the morning skate with a full bubble on. So I said to Patty, I'm like, I said, I think you're okay with your, you know, it's way up here, and you'll be okay. I didn't want to say Billy's going to lose it. He goes, no, I need a bubble. And I'm like, Patty, Billy's going to lose it if I put a bubble on you for that cut. I just finally had to say it. He goes, I don't give a damn about pride, he says. He goes, we got to go play Hershey. They'll be punching me and face washing me all night long. And so I'm like, oh, no, man. So I put it on. Billy comes up the steps, man. He didn't even get on the ice. He saw him as he's walking around. Delio, get that off his. I'm like, you go tell him. I'll do whatever you say, man. But, like, you should have seen this whole thing. I think he ended up wearing it, though. He told Billy he was wearing it. So, that was crazy.
And Uhlin wasn't there the next year. I wonder why.
Yeah, I know, right? I know. That's true.
He's gone, yeah. Funny stuff.
Yeah, it was good. So Boosh, I always tell guys, like, you played for a lot of NHL teams. Everybody wanted you. Well, that's for sure. Right. But
they did.
No, I'm kidding. I didn't realize. I do realize once I looked, cause I obviously knew you and followed you and everything, but, you're basically 5 games, that whole streak when you didn't get scored on. What was that like, man? That just must be, like, you were just in a zone. You're like Michael Jordan, man. You're in the zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and MJ, same deal, you know.
Still raking in the cash he's making it every day. Hey, for five games.
Last dance.
For 332 minutes, man.
Yeah, right.
You were right there.
That's a long time, dude.
What was that? The show was called The Last Dance for him. Mine was The Only Dance. That's the only dance I had.
Hey, dude, it's an amazing dance, though. You got to admit, that was wild. That was wild.
Yeah, it was. It was. You know, the funny thing was, I, you know, I was third string goalie that year for about a month and a half. And Benoit Allaire is the goalie coach with the Rangers right now. And he's worked with Lundqvist and now Shesterkin. So he's got this great track record of turning goaltenders into Hall of Famers, except me. he'd say, hey, you can't practice with the team. And he'd just take me out for goalie practice for like a month and a half. And oh, I'd skate there with guys that were scratched and stuff. And I didn't know what was going on. I think I was on a 3-year deal with the Coyotes. Like, they traded for me and I was supposed to be the eventual number one after Sean Burke. So I was kind of like, didn't know what was going on. And I finally went into Bobby Francis's office, who's the head coach at the time, about a month in. And I said, hey, Bobby, I was like, you know, when can I practice with the team? I mean, like, I've been doing this for a month. And he's like, he goes, what the hell took you so long? He's like, I've been waiting for you to come in my office and ask that question.
No way.
And I was like, yeah. And I was, he goes, he's like, this guy, he's got it out for you. Like, he doesn't want you. And I was like, holy crap. I was like, no kidding. And, it ended up working out because, you know, as it always does, inevitably somebody gets injured and the door opens. And, but I will say that, you know, Rick Bowness, Pat Conacher, those were the assistant coaches at the time. You know, they came out on the ice often and worked with me during that time as well. And they kept me sane and kept my head straight. And I just was, it was one of those situations where you're pent up and you've been locked up for a month and a half and you finally get an opportunity to play. And like the stars align. And I had like this huge chip on my shoulder to want to prove that I could, you know, be the guy. And it all worked out for, you know, 5.5 games. And then eventually I came back down to earth. But the guys that played in front of me, I mean, man, blocking shots. We were a shit team. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we were terrible. And guys were, you know, staying out of the box, blocking shots, eating pucks in January, you know.
Yeah.
And we got it done. So, I mean, I it's one of those records that it's kind of like, I don't think people realize, you probably picture Marty Brodeur to be the guy that has it. It's kind of weird that I would have it, but it just shows you that anything can happen. Although I don't think I will say this on record. I don't think it will be broken in my lifetime. Now with the way the rules are set up now,
yeah, I agree.
No red line, yeah, no right. Red line, three on three overtime. Like, yeah. Those goals count against the goaltender. It's not like, you know, so it's going to become harder and harder. I just don't see. And it's not like I'm trying to sit here and tout how great I am. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm just saying the way the game is today in the offense and the way the players are, I just can't see that record being challenged.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, and it is a amazing record if you think about it. I mean, you're a goalie, we don't have to tell you, but like to go 5 games, like not having a goal scored on you, man, like this shit just doesn't happen. Like pucks bounce off of someone and go in, you know, just crazy things happen.
Look how Provorov scored last night.
Exactly.
I mean, he throws it from the corner, goes off Klingberg's skate. That stuff happens all the time.
Yeah. I was thinking that exactly last night. That was the goal they were able to muster up. But yeah, I mean, Boo, you had a great career, man. Played a long time, which is hard to do.
Four stints with the Flyers organization too. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Three actually rocked the Flyers jersey, telling of your character and obviously your ability to perform too, because they obviously knew you, they drafted you in the whole bit. But you also came back to Philly the 1 year and stole my number dude, back.
I couldn't believe it. I'm like,
I like it better in 32 anyway.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. You know, it fit better. It was meant to be.
Yeah.
You're a good man for giving up that number, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Nasty's like, Boosh is, we just signed Boosh. He's like, all right, here's the 32, here's 33. What number do you want? It was like a 10-second conversation.
What do you want? Here's what's available,
yeah.
Big boy.
Yeah, right. There was no, there was no 33. Discussion. There was no discussion. It was an absolute.
I should send you a gift card to some. What are you eating these days? You're eating Whole Foods or some organic.
He doesn't eat much, Boo. He doesn't eat much,
I
man. But he was about $1.70,
$1.85, Boo.
I don't think you do anymore.
What?
Your hair. That's why you weigh $1.85.
Yeah, exactly. Gonna pat on the weight where I can.
Yeah. So Boosh, with 2009-10, we had that great run, and it started with, well, a lot of things happened, but the last game of the year, man, you talk about pressure for all the players, but God, for a goalie, and it comes down to a shootout. Was that one of your coolest moments? I mean, I know you had quite a few, but to me, that was that year we always talk about. That was just one of the greatest years. I know we came up a little short, but it was just what a team, what a group of guys. And you went through a lot of shit that year, man. You got hurt a couple times, but that game, man, you know, you stopped the final penalty shot, and it was just awesome. And your reaction was great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was so cool.
I wish I could redo it over. I mean, I slipped when I tried to get up the first time, you know?
That no one cares, man. It was awesome.
You know, it's funny because we played the Rangers game 81 at Madison Square Garden, right? Mm-hmm. And we had a chance. All we had to do was get a point. I think we just needed a point to get in. And we lost, I think it was 4-3 in that game. And we had the goal. They pulled me at the end of the game for the extra attacker. So I'm sitting on the bench where we're in their zone, frantically trying to score. And we don't. And at the end, Lundqvist, you know, he does this thing that he always did. He'd always take his stick and hit the post. And then he does this, you know, this pump that he does. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just sat there and I was like, this goddamn son of a. I was like, you know, I was like, and I thought about it the whole train ride home, you know, and I probably shouldn't. Most probably sports psychologists would tell you, don't do this, right? Yeah. But I was like, I swear to God, if I win in game 82, I'm doing his celebration. That's what I'm going to do. Because I was like, I was so mad the way he celebrated. And I know it's his thing. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Right.
The guy's a Hall of Famer. He's like one of the best ever to play. I get immense respect. But I was like, I swear to God, if we win, I'm doing that celebration. So it comes down to the shootout. And he's like the greatest shootout goaltender that we have ever seen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if I think I soiled my pants like, before the shootout. Like, I was so nervous. And, oh, by the way, I played. I mean, like, I made a good save on the first one on Christensen, but, like, the Parento goal, I end up in my net, even on the Jokinen save. Like, I was so, like, amped up and jacked up that I couldn't control my speed going back. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I was
yeah.
really fortunate. Jokinen didn't make a better move, and I was able to come up with that save, but. And to get up and do that celebration, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At home. Like, I can't tell you how great that felt, you know, especially because I love playing in Philly. I played in a lot of places, like you said, but Philly was the one place that, you know, having, you know, the Calder Cup championship there, right? My rookie year, we were one game away from going to the Stanley Cup final. Great memories there. Like, the springtime in Philly with the playoffs, it's everything. You know what I mean? For us players, right, Riles? I mean, it's a total different world. It's our city at that point. The Eagles are not playing yet. The Phillies, the Phillies are just starting. Like, it's our time, you know? Yep. And to be able to come through and have the crowd, you know, erupt like that, I mean, that was a true magic moment for me. A highlight for sure. Maybe one or two has to be in my career.
Yeah, it was great, man. That was God.
Just, you're right. It was a tough year because like, I think we went seven goalies. It was supposed to be Emery and myself.
Yep.
And Razor, unfortunately, he had the hip issues, and you know that opened the door to some other guys coming in. And then I got hurt at Christmas time. I broke a finger, and Leighton came in, and he basically stole my job. You know, there's no other way to say it. I mean, he came in and I was Wally Pipp, you know, and he was Lou Gehrig, and he came in and he didn't give up the net for about 7 weeks, not until he got hurt again in Nashville. And, you know, we just kept going back and forth, and, you know, the competitor in you wants to play, right?
Right.
I mean, I didn't
100%.
Lose my job. Like, I mean, I came to the rink every day. Like I was pissed. Like I wanted to play. And, so to be able to have that moment was, you know, was great. I mean, obviously it didn't work out the way we wanted in the end. And I don't know, maybe we had nine lives that year and we were able to get to that point. But, yeah, that moment was great. Just would have been better if we would have finished hoisting the Stanley Cup. It would have been unbelievable.
100%.
Yeah, the energy we carried into the playoffs was insane. You know, you talk about just getting into the playoffs is the most important part, and then it's a brand new season. You keep hearing people say that, but, you know, we had the chance to actually experience that. That energy was like almost unstoppable. Obviously, it was stoppable because we didn't win. But you know, but those three rounds, man, I'm telling you, like the energy, we just like felt like we just knew we were gonna win. You know, is that
destiny? It was destiny. You know, like and the injuries that we had in the Boston series, Carts being out and Gags being out, and then Gags coming back, and it was like you just couldn't believe it. And then you get Montreal in the conference final. You're like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
they were the eighth seed.
Washington, Yeah, Pitt and Washington are out. I mean, you couldn't script it any better. The Canadians couldn't even skate when they played against us. Like they were dead.
They were dead.
You know?
They were dead.
Yeah.
They were kind of lucky to get the one win they got, to be honest. Yeah. Like we were all over. Yeah. Like every game was kind
all
of
all over them.
Yeah. It was but it was a great year, and I'll never forget that moment you making that stop and just God, it was like you said, just feeding off the energy, rolling into the playoffs. That was the night we've talked about before where we ended up at McDaniels, a bunch of us, and G was, you know, a young kid at the time, and he was going, We can win, man, I'm telling you. And guys are like, all right, Claude, okay. No, I'm serious, we can win, you know. But he was dead. See, he meant it, and he goes, I'm telling you, we're sick, like blah blah blah. And it was like guys were like, yeah, we got a good team, man. You know, like we're rolling. So, but it was a great time, man. It really was. It was awesome.
We had a good team. I mean, when you think about it, Homer did a good job of kind of going all in that summer prior, right?
Yeah.
Picking up prongs.
Yeah, that was huge.
And you know, Danny was a big playoff performer, and Karts and Richie were, to me, they were money. And G was a blossoming star coming up, who he was so eager, right? I mean, he was so talented and had all this energy. And Chemo was like your steady vet all the time back there. We had a great group of guys that, you know, like we just battled it all year long. We couldn't get our acts together, but like Riles, like you said, I mean, timing and getting in at the right moment and riding that wave of momentum. And truthfully, I mean, you think back on Chicago, they were ripe for the taking too.
Yeah.
I mean, their goaltending was not very good. Neither was ours, but if there was ever a time to beat the Blackhawks in their dynasty, it would have been that year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cause they had no experience really, but yeah, and we fell short. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. Tough business, you know.
It's
hard to win. People don't realize, like, I mean, I don't know it from a player's standpoint, but being in the game for 26 years, man, it's not easy. No, at any level.
It's a grind.
To go through that whole process with, like you said, Bush, injuries, you're fighting those, which everyone does. Everyone plays with injuries, but it's just it's a hard thing to do, man. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
I was going to say, a couple years later, you land up signing back with the Flyers. This is your fourth time now. And then I had been retired for a couple years, and then you landed up in Adirondack. And it was quite an experience up there. But talk about
the, for all of us.
Yeah, for all of us. Talk about like the mixture of you actually getting sent down to Adirondack and having actually report there, and then your experience in Adirondack.
Well, I'll rewind a little bit. So I was in Carolina. I signed a 2-year deal after 2 years with the Flyers. And truthfully, I didn't want to sign with Carolina. I wanted to stay in Philly, and I would have loved to have been Bob's backup, you know, and work with him. It didn't work out that way. You know, they ended up signing Brizgalov, and there was really no room for me. So, you know, it was one of those situations. You go to Carolina, be like, man, I'm tired of moving at this point. You know, and my family was tired of it. I was tired of it. And I went there, and my heart wasn't really, I was a Flyer. I wanted to be a Flyer, you know, and, I go there, I got hurt. I tore my groin, missed 3 months. And then we have the lockout. And then during the lockout in that summer, going into my second year with the Hurricanes, it's Father's Day. Right. And I'm at the pool club nearby my house, and my son's a little guy. He's in the water, and he's like, "Dad, do a cannonball, right?" And I know I'm getting off topic here, so I go, "No, that's gonna hurt." And it's a 3 meter, 10 feet. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I go, "I'm gonna dive." So I dive off the diving board, right? I overshoot the dive, right? And upon impact of the water, dislocate my shoulder on Father's Day.
No.
I'm in the water. I come out of the water, and my son's laughing at me because my leg slapped the water, you know? And I'm like, I'm hurt. And now there's like panic going on. My wife's panicking, you know what I mean? This woman comes up to me. She's like, "I'm a nurse." I was like, pop it back in. I get out of there. She's like, "I'm not touching you." You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So I drove to a hospital. My wife took me to the fire station. They're like, "No chance." They're like, "Hospital." I dislocated for 2 hours until a doctor could finally come and pop it back in. Anyway, long story short,
I remember that.
I remember this happening.
The Carolina Hurricanes suspend me, right? Because I did it in a non-hockey related incident.
Right? Oh my god!
And then we have the lockout, but we file a grievance because in the training manual there's a swimming aspect to the training, and that's exactly what I was doing. I had to jump in the pool and go for a swim, you know, and work on my off-season training. And so in the end, they were very good to me. I came in, I was able to rehab my shoulder and all of that at the Flyers during the lockout, which is not something that I don't even know if I should say it, but whatever. I'm grateful for it.
Yeah.
And in the end, Paul Holmgren did me a solid and traded back for me, knowing that my family wanted to be here, and I'm sure the Hurricanes sensed it too. And they traded me back to Philly for a fourth time, and I knew that I was going to the minors at that point. But I also had a shoulder that wasn't nearly 100%. It was my second shoulder surgery, and although it sucks to go back down to the minors and maybe being Glens Falls, New York, I was again grateful to be in the Flyers organization, and I thank Homer for that because he's a solid man. Like he did a lot of great things for a lot of people, myself included. And at times he brought me back there. Every time he helped my career, and it was awesome, even though it was Glens Falls.
Yeah. Ryle's loved it there. I used to talk to him, you know, a lot.
It would have been a better experience if we had won a few more games, but
probably.
Yeah, no, it was an experience myself.
I tried, but I had one arm for crying out loud, you know.
No, chicken wing.
Oh, that's
quite the experience.
What? I wasn't poke checking anybody with that arm the way it was. No chance. I was like, the only thing I wanted to do is get out of a game without dislocating my shoulder. And if I did,
yeah, right. It's a win.
It was a win. Yeah. I don't care if I gave up seven. Yeah. Like, I'm out of here.
That's amazing. I remember you doing that, Boo. I remember when that happened. I forgot about them suspending you though. I did forget that part of it, but,
It worked out. The Hurricanes in the end, they did the right thing, took care of me, and it's all good. It's all good. Now it's just a funny story.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. So, Boo, let you brag a little bit here. I know you're super proud of your son Tyler. Last summer, 10th overall pick by Ottawa. I remember watching you and seeing the whole thing, and I messaged you, and you messaged me back, but. What a feeling that must be watching your son get drafted. I mean, you went through it, but you know, so many people, like, it's just hard to do. Let's be honest. And it's an amazing feat.
Yeah. I think I don't know if every parent that plays hockey wants their kid to play hockey, but I mean, we all say we want to let our kids, you know, chase their own passions and whatnot. But, you know, I did start him in hockey. He seemed to like it. So I was like, okay, we'll start him. You never know where it's going to go. And you always wonder if they have the drive to want to, you know, pursue it for real. And, you know, I thought early on Tyler liked it, but I thought he had other interests as well. And then eventually, you know, he really wanted to be a hockey player and he really stuck with it. And I think, you know, last year what I was most proud of is that he had a tough year. I mean, he had two separate knee injuries. One was his own doing. He tried to go in on a forecheck and kill somebody on a forecheck and unfortunately mangled himself. And then the second time, someone got him on a dirty play in the neutral zone, a low hit, a low bridge hit. So he missed a lot of time. Plus, he had COVID that actually was, you know, it affected him negatively. So he didn't play a lot, right? And that's tough on a kid in your draft year. I think your mind gets going in a million different directions. Yeah. You're wondering, you know, what's going to happen. And I think teams saw value in the way he plays, and he's kind of a throwback player. I think a guy that, you know, could have played on our Phantom teams back in the day.
Yeah.
has the ability to play. I don't know if he can fight. I mean, that, you know, that is yet to be determined, but he certainly goes out there and he loves to hit. He plays in the dirty areas, and I think teams value that, especially come springtime. So, you know, but when you play that way, I think you're going to get nicked up a little bit, but yeah, I'm proud of him. And right now he decided to make a change of plans. He was at Boston University to start the season up until Christmas. You know, I think he was frustrated a little bit on the hockey side of things. And I think he wanted to go all in into the hockey aspect. So he decided to switch it up and go to the OHL and play junior. I think playing more games is important for him, considering the fact that he missed a lot of hockey last year. I think he feels like he just wants to play more games and, yeah, and get after it that way. And I told him, I was like, I have no issue with it. Like, he wanted to go to school, and we supported him in that sense. And I think it made mom happy for the most part. But, you know, you only get a window of opportunity to be a hockey player for so long, right? You can always go back to school, but you can't decide at 28 years old, oh, now I want to commit my life to hockey and being a hockey player. Like, the NHL is getting younger, and you're seeing 18, 19-year-olds playing the league now because they're cheaper options, but also because they're good players at a younger age now. They're better trained. Their skills are there. Their skating's there. So there's a lot of benefits to making sure that you're ready at a younger age so you can get that opportunity, because you don't want to let it pass by and then 2-3 drafts go by and now there's younger kids that are coming up taking that spot that could have been yours. So
yeah,
I think he recognizes that, wants to get after it and be a hockey player. I commend him for it, and we support him 110%.
Yeah, that's great, man. That's great.
And moving to the OHL would probably be a little more in his wheelhouse on his style of play too, right? You say the more games, the grittier type of play. It's not saying you can't play like that at BU, but you know, the OHL is probably certainly a little bit closer to the NHL game than college would be, games as well as style of play.
Yeah, I think so. I think you know, it's not like it used to be, right? Like back in the day, you know, I think juniors changed, cleaned up quite a bit. But yeah, I just think, you know, him being able to play more games to me is what really stands out. Like, I just think he needs more puck touches, more reps, you know, be in situations where he can help generate offense and get that confidence going. You know, in college, it's good hockey, but the kids are older. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier, there's a pecking order oftentimes where the older kids get an opportunity because they've been there already, right? And I understand that, but I think for Tyler's situation, it being unique in the sense that he didn't play a lot last year, it's just super important that he gets those reps, because you don't get that back, you know, like your confidence, you only get one shot at it. And if you get confidence and you feel good about yourself, you can ride that momentum, that wave to the next level and then continue it, right? Whereas if you don't accomplish something, then you're constantly trying to chase your confidence, and eventually I think it hurts you in your career. So that's what we're looking at. We'll see, you know, the style of play. I mean, he hits hard. He certainly was physically mature enough, like at his size, to play with those older kids in college. It'll be interesting to see when he lines up, you know, against some 16-year-olds or, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of there'll be a disparity as far as, like, you know, I think you gotta be mindful of that too. You can't be a reckless player and go out there and, you know, try to take heads off. You got to play the game the right way, and you're hitting for a purpose, right? You're hitting to you know, get the puck back or win the puck. You're not there to, you know, put somebody on a stretcher.
Yeah. Right. 100%. Also, it would be, how cool would it be to see him play with Mark Gregg's son, Ridley, who was also drafted by Ottawa. Like, it's just so funny, you know, those guys being teammates, hopefully here in the near future. I just thought that was really cool that, I mean, I don't guess they would really know each other besides maybe if they went to camp together or something. But I thought that was pretty cool. Ritter was
playing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. And Gregor was a roommate of mine on the Phantoms, right?
How funny
is
that?
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, and I don't know if you've watched Ridley play at all, but he's a hockey player.
Yeah.
This kid plays. Yeah. He plays hard. He's gritty, plays the right way. He's fun to watch. Like, he's one of those kids. It's, you know, when you watch him play, he has an impact on games. You know, whereas I think Gregor was a great skater, right? Good offensive player, but I don't want to rip on Mark, but, you know, I think he's a more complete player in that sense that he has that edge to him. Right. And, I think he's going to be a really good pro from what I've seen. And just the guys that are on, you know, the guys that have kids that are in Ottawa, I just think about a dad's trip someday. Hopefully.
Yeah. Right. That's awesome. Yeah.
We'll have some pretty good stories and, you know, share some good times, and, you know, it'd be good. But my kid's got to make it there first. I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Well,
you know, it's just one step in the process.
Knock wood that the process ends them up together. That would be cool.
That would be really cool.
That would be awesome.
Hey, before we let you go, Boosh, two things. We want to talk a little bit of Flyers hockey, what you're seeing that maybe we're not seeing, if that's anything. And then we got to squeeze at least one
D to D.
One D to D out of you, at least. if not a power play setup too. So what do you see with the Flyers? Obviously a complete mess right now, but is there any hope?
Not this year. I don't think. I think, you know, obviously I think the East is set with playoffs.
Yeah.
The eight teams that are in today are going to be the teams that are come playoff time. There'll be some jockeying perhaps as far as seedings are concerned, but you know, just a tough year for the Flyers. I mean, you know, Ryan Ellis being injured all year long, that's not what, Chuck Fletcher envisioned, I'm sure, when they made the trade.
No.
I didn't have a problem with the trade. I mean, I think, you know, you give up a young player, a young D-man, but you're picking up a veteran guy in the hopes that he's okay, and it turns out he wasn't okay health-wise, and that kind of hurt your group. And then Coots being injured has not been good. And,
yeah,
you know, unfortunately for Kevin Hayes, you know, the personal tragedy with his brother and then his health. I mean, it's been one thing after the next for this team. And I know they all sound like excuses, but Rouse, you know this. I mean, you when you're missing, it's you can't just put names on a jersey and have them go play and they be the same. I mean, there's a reason why these guys are paid a certain amount of money and put in certain positions, because they are who they are. And when you don't have them, you're just not the same. Now, that being said, Carter Hart, I thought, has rebounded great from a tough year last year. And I think his play has been a bright spot for this team. And it's not easy. I think back to when I was 23 years old, I was a rookie. And by the end of the year, I had 35 games under my resume at 23 years old, right?
Yeah.
This guy is over, 108 career games or something like that now in his career. So he's had the good, the bad, and now the rebound. All this experience is huge for a young goaltender, you know. And I'm just so impressed with the way that he's been able to bounce back this year in a place that it can be difficult for goaltenders. So that's a bright spot. I think G has to move on. I think G, you know, I think he has to go to a place where he has a chance to win. He deserves it.
I know he wants
to be a Flyer and he's a captain, but in my opinion, if he was asking me, not that he is, I'd be like, man, get a trade to one of those central teams, and whether it's St. Louis playing for Chief or Colorado, which is a wagon, or Minnesota that plays the game the right way. You know, Billy Guerin's done a great job assembling that team. I think those would be great spots for him to try and win a Stanley Cup, you know, because the window's closing for him. He deserves it. He's played his heart out. He's played banged up. Yeah. And, you know, I think, and I just think you got to retool and you got to figure out a way to get younger, get the younger guys in the mix. It's unfortunate. Wade Allison injured right now. It would have been exciting to see him play. Farabee's out now for a little bit. So, it's just one of those years where it's just, you know, and I think I don't know if you were here, Riles, for that year when they had Forsberg and all that. It was a tough year for the Flyers. Maybe that was before you were here.
It was the year before myself, yeah.
Yeah, and that was a tough year here. Yeah. But they quickly rebounded and made some moves and got back there. And I think that's what you have to look for. I mean, I know it just hasn't gone their way, but just tough to watch because I think the Flyer fans have and tried to be patient, you know, and they, you know, I think they want to get back to, you know, having springtime be an exciting time in the city. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be for a bit until some of these young guys can come in and make a difference.
Yeah, for sure. There was a lot of expectations going into the season. I think that's the biggest thing, right? I mean, the moves they made in the offseason were, you know, on paper, I think heading in the right direction, as you mentioned, the Ellis move, you know, and a couple other ones.
Ristolainen too. Yeah. I know they gave up a lot for Ristolainen. But, like, I like the way he plays. Like, if I'm a goalie, I want a big D-man like that plays nasty in front of me. They've got Sanheim, who's mobile. Provorov, a guy that's mobile. You know, that you don't need all of those. You don't need all of them. You know what I mean? Yandle, they picked up the help with the power play. And I think there's been times this year where he has created deception up there and has been able to help the power play. But it's been a perfect storm of crap. You know what I mean? That it's hard to evaluate. And I just think, you know, everything they just need a reset. And I know fans don't want to hear that with 40 games to go, but that's just the reality of it. I think most fans are realistic. They know that.
Yeah. I think it's at that point now where it's pretty obvious what needs to happen and where it's going. So
yeah,
we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Well, you just need to make show you yes when you skate the puck. You must go D to D, right? And then back to D and yes, play the game the right way. That's yes, what you need to do.
What about if you're on the power play, Boosh? What would you do on the power play? I'm not sure.
Well, if I'm Joey Mullen, you gotta have Hotsy, you need Kotsy, and G. Those are the three guys you need on the power play, and they're gonna run the power play, and you need to know where Yogs is at all times. Yogs, you know, and that's how Joey would run it.
That is exactly. Oh my God, that is beautiful.
So good.
Oh
so God, good.
You guys got it out of me, man.
It's great. Oh my God, I love it. I love it. Boosh, real quick, you played for a lot of guys. I know you got to go here. Just a couple quick questions. Who's your favorite coach, like, ever, that you played for, would you say?
Ooh, that's a great
Maybe not
great
even
question.
Your favorite, but, you know, one of your favorites or the you really liked. I'm sure you respected and liked the guys, but.
I will say this. I mean, I always, for some reason, had, when you don't play, you're kind of like, you got like this, you feel like, man, the coach doesn't like me. Right. You know, so yeah. You always had and I was always a guy that some along the line, somebody didn't like me or play me. And so you turn it into something personal. When now that I look back on my career with clear lens, I realize it wasn't personal either. I wasn't doing my job. I wasn't good enough. But, you know, when I look back at the coaches that were good, you know, I think Labby was a great coach. You know, I thought he was a good motivator. Yeah. I think back to the things that he said in the room and the stuff that he did, although quirky at times, maybe for, you know, grown adults, they had an impact. And I thought he did a good job. And I thought he did a good job of turning our room around. You know, I think Billy was great for us in the minors. And I think he taught us to play with that pride that it meant to be we weren't Flyers at the time, but to play in Philadelphia and play for our teammates, right? Stick up for one another. I thought Billy brought that out in us, you know. And then when I think to my other coaches, like I like Todd McClellan when I had him in San Jose.
Oh yeah,
I just
yeah.
thought he was extremely prepared. He was a great communicator. I thought, you know, especially with me as a backup goaltender, he communicated very well. And he's doing a great job in LA right now with that team. I think they're exceeding expectations. So. You know, every coach, although, you know, at the time you're kind of like, oh, guy hates me and you got some issues with him. You know what I mean? It's not personal at the end of the day. And now when I see Lavi doing my job, he's great. Like he's a good coach. There's a reason why he's been coaching as long as he's been coaching and doing what he's doing. It's not always about winning the Stanley Cup. It, as you said, it's not easy. Yeah, right.
Right.
I mean, you got to get your team in position to win those Stanley Cups. And I think, you know, when I look back at the job that Labby's done, every place he's gone, he's had an immediate impact on just about every team he's coached. And that speaks to how good of a coach he is.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about Labby before, just as an equipment guy, usually the coaches come in. I try to like sneak out of the room so I'm not stuck in there. But I actually liked listening to him do the pregame speech. Yeah. Just like it was always different, too, it seemed like. It was never like the same old thing. You know, and people always ask me, like, when you guys did that HBO thing, was that just him acting? I'm like, no, dude, that was just normal, man. That was what I thought was really cool about Labby. And, you know, he did do a lot of quirky things, but it made you wonder, what is in that box, man? Yeah. What's in this box that he's like, you know, he just did all these weird things, but little games, little...
But think about the thought.
Yeah.
The thought that goes into it as a coach. It's not like he just went home and like didn't care about... You knew he cared about the team. He cared about winning. He tried to get the most out of his players, you know? And eventually these coaches run out of runway. There's no doubt. But when you got a guy that cares like that, I mean, you got to be an idiot not to recognize that.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
Well, Boosh, we really appreciate you taking the time out. I know you're busy, man. You're doing a great job. Been doing a great job on TV. Continue success with that, buddy. And hopefully we get to run into you sooner or later. I know we got to play golf a while back, but you're not around the area.
That was fun.
Yeah.
No, I moved out. Don't tell Frankie where I'm at. I don't want him to find me. I moved back home to Rhode Island, closer to family right now. Kids are out of the house, so we felt it was the right time to do it. But I've moved so much, like I was telling Riles before we started, you know, everything's temporary, man. Like, you know, things can change in 2 years, 3 years, who knows. Where I lay my hat is my home. It's nothing permanent, you know?
Yeah, I hear you, man. But we appreciate your time, buddy. Doing a great job.
Yeah, great to be with you guys. You guys look great. Keep it going. Nasty, I don't know how you do it, man. Like, seriously, how old are you now?
I'm going to be 36, man.
Let's go back 36
in March, bro.
He's sick. I don't know how you do it, man. Every
36 for 20 years.
Every time I put my suit on, it gets tighter and tighter. I'm disgusted by myself. Oh, my God. You guys look great.
You too, buddy. Man.
Appreciate you, Boosh. Great seeing you. That episode was brought to you by Fans of Philly. Check them out at fansoffilly.com. Nasty, you and I will be joining 500 other Flyer fans
in
Nashville in March. So check us out.
Smashville. Great time. If you've never gone on a trip with any of the sports, you have to. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Joe does an unbelievable job, and he's all his people that help out. It's a great time, and I can't wait for Smashville.
I know, you and me both. So check us out there. Check out fansoffilly.com. And a big thank you to our man, Brian Boucher.
Boo.
What a human.
Yep, great man.
Yeah, it was nice to reconnect.
Does just an unbelievable job on TV. God, really he's so good, man. And good career, great career. I mean, anytime you play that many games. And it's funny, I didn't realize that story about him, like, not even practicing with a team when he ended up turning around and setting the record. I did not remember that. But it truly was amazing. Like he said, I don't know if that'll be broken. It's tough to go that many games, right? Like,
especially with the skill level these days. Not that there was a problem with the skill level back then, but just, it's just it's too fast, and they created too many opportunities to be offensive here now. So I agree. That'll probably never be broken.
Yeah, it'd be amazing if it is. It was amazing the fact that he went that long with it, but I don't know if that'll be broken.
No. And, you know, one of the things I remember about Boosh when I played with him is, and he kind of talked about it when he's talking about Frankie, you know, never shooting below the nipples.
Yeah, right.
I remember myself coming down the wing in practice and a lot of times shots coming off high.
Off the green gob.
Off the green gob, right? And high heat right at the head or by the head. Yeah. And I remember Boosh snapping in that. Swearing and shooting pucks at us, and you know, I get it, man. You're in practice, who wants to get rubber ripped at your head? But I forgot to bring that up when he was talking about Frankie and shooting below the nips. Because I wouldn't want to be in the net.
I wouldn't either.
Like that rocket that
rocket I wouldn't either. I remember Hexy was like funny about that too. Obviously, his mentality was a little different than Boosh's, but I remember us being in the playoffs and no one shot at his head, but he was just. He was ready for the game. It was the morning skate in Carl Dykehouse. Hexy didn't like pucks being in the net. So Hexy turned his back and Dykers threw the puck in the net and like kidding around, raised his hands and circled. He gets about out to the blue line and Hexy fired the puck at him, not meaning to hit him. Hit him right in the head. Morning skate, stitches on his. Hexy's like, don't ever do that again, but I'm sorry. That hurt you. You know, but we're like, good God, man. You put his, he didn't wear a visor or anything. Hit him right in the head.
Oh,
and again, he didn't mean to.
Unnecessary.
But you're right. You don't want to be in practices as a goalie and guys coming down. And you had an absolute cannon with that green goblin.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't want to get hit with it.
Well, who would? Who would?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody. Oh, man. But Boosh is awesome, man. Yeah. Great guest. We appreciate him coming on.
Absolutely. All right, Nast, episode 59 in the books.
In the books. Big 6-0 next week.
Oh, yeah. Check us out next week. Until then, stay safe, knuckleheads.
See you, knuckleheads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.